Now Monitor brings you Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence E. Spivak with four of America's top news reporters ready for this unrehearsed news conference. Here's the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. Our guest is Mr. Irwin Canham, who yesterday returned from a trip to the Soviet Union. He has the unique distinction of being president of the United States Chamber of Commerce and editor of the Christian Science Monitor. His visit abroad was to meet and talk with his opposite numbers, the president of the All-Soviet Chamber of Commerce and the editor of Soviet newspapers. Mr. Canham had an unusual opportunity to appraise the reaction of the Russian people to the recent visit of Vice President Nixon and the forthcoming exchange of visits between President Eisenhower and Premier Khrushchev, also to observe whether any changes have occurred inside the Soviet Union. Mr. Canham has been a reporter since 1925 and editor of the Christian Science Monitor since 1945. Over a span of years, he has been an observer at most of the great events that have made world history. As a member of the Advisory Commission on Information, he helped to shape this government's policy on information and propaganda overseas. He is a past president of the American Society of Newspaper Editors. More than a dozen colleges and universities have awarded him honorary degrees. And now seated around the press table, ready to interview Mr. Canham, are Richard Wilson of the Coles Publications, Earl Mazo of the New York Herald Tribune, Harry Schwartz of the New York Times, and Lawrence E. Spivak, our regular member of the Meet the Press panel. Now, Mr. Canham, if you're ready, sir, we'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Canham, now that you've been to Russia and seen many things for yourself, what is your appraisal of the reporting in American papers of conditions in the Soviet Union?
I think it's very good, just as good as it possibly can be, considering that there is from time to time some impediment from the censorship.
Did you learn anything from your visit, though, that you didn't know before from the reports you've read?
You always learn something by being there yourself. Personal contact, with all respect to my own profession, is still a little better than not having personal contact. And you feel, you smell, you taste, you see, and you learn something no matter how much you read.
Mr. Canham, were there any surprising things that you learned?
I don't know whether they were so surprising. They were impressive. And I hadn't been impressed because I hadn't seen them before. Seeing them, I was impressed. I was impressed above all, of course, by the people. The people were by far the most interesting thing. I spent all my time I possibly could get simply looking at and talking to people.
Mr. Canham, what impressed you? You say the people. This is very general. But what specific thing impressed you most of what you saw while you were there?
In connection with the current situation, the tremendous interest of these people in the United States, in the American exposition, and in our intentions, in our way of life, in what we believe. Following the Nixon visit, there has, I think, a continuing and extensive interest, curiosity, hunger of these people for information about the West was the thing that hit me hardest.
Mr. Canham, I'd like to read to you a quotation from J. Edward Murray of the Los Angeles Mirror News, who had just come back from Russia also. And this is what he said. I, as an editor, went to Russia and was surprised to find how good things were for the ordinary Russian. They were much better off than I expected to find them. They didn't seem enslaved and didn't want to escape across the nearest border. They seemed well-fed, adequately dressed, and happy. They seemed as free as they wanted to be, appeared patriotic, and seemed to feel they were living under the best of all possible systems. Did you come away with that kind of an impression about
Not altogether. I think that's a considerable overstatement.
Mr. Schwartz.
Mr. Canham, there's been a great deal of speculation around that the Russians think that Mr. Khrushchev has won a major victory in the fact that he's been invited to the United States by President Eisenhower. I wondered whether you agreed with that estimate on the basis of your sounding of Soviet opinion in Moscow.
Yes. From his point of view, from their point of view, I'm sure they think it's a major victory. They are delighted. They're a member of a polite society now, and this has been, I think, one of their goals for quite a while.
Oh, but is it only that they're members of polite society? After all, President Eisenhower didn't meet with Mr. Khrushchev and then Premier Bulgarin back in Geneva in 1955.
We didn't invite them into the living room. And that perhaps constitutes the membership of polite society. And it's probably more than that. It probably means that they think that now, ultimately, sooner or later, negotiations which will lead to a more peaceful adjustment of East-West tensions are possible. And I think the people genuinely want peace.
Do you think that the Russians want peace in any terms that we understand them? That is, live and let live, at the end of communist subversion? Do you think that there's any such communist desire for peace?
Not on the part of the Soviet government, as far as I know. I was speaking for what impressions I could have, small though they were, of ordinary people.
But does that have anything to do with Soviet policy,
Mr.
Kanem?
It has something to do with Soviet policy. Not perhaps decisive. I think at times it might be decisive. It's certainly not a negligible factor, I wouldn't think.
Mr. Maisel.
What were the reactions that you found to the Nixon visit?
I thought they were delighted, as far as I could see. Everybody that spoke of it, and many did, spoke of it with much pleasure. They were very happy that the Vice President of the United States had been there, and I think they enjoyed what they heard, and I don't know that they heard too much, of the debate. And they seemed to respond, or at least they were interested. They reacted a bit to the Nixon speeches. I think they were, generally speaking, very pleased. Somewhat the same thing as I answered a moment ago. Nixon coming into their living room was part of this social relationship.
You found that most of them did see and hear the Nixon speeches?
Those that I talked with. But, of course, I talked to only a few in the Capitol, and I can't generalize beyond that.
I wonder, as a president of probably the world's biggest businessman's organization and the editor of a very respected international newspaper, what your reaction is to the political effects domestically of the Nixon visit and of the exchange between visits coming up between Eisenhower and Khrushchev.
Domestically here in the United
States? That's in the United States, yeah.
I think that the overwhelming part of American public opinion is very much interested and in support of the visit, although, as everybody knows, there is a sharp and vigorous and outspoken minority objection.
Do you think there'll be a plus effect then for the Republicans?
Yes, but I don't think it's very much of a partisan matter.
Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Kanem, you spoke of being impressed by seeing things in the Soviet Union that you had probably previously heard of but had not fully appreciated. There are several thousand Americans who are in Russia this year as tourists.
15,000 to 19,000.
15,000 to 19,000. I wonder if you think that many of them are strongly impressed, and if they are going to carry back with them a sense that perhaps in this country things are not as good as they should be.
Oh, it's awfully hard to generalize about 15 to 19,000 human beings, and especially 15 to 19,000 Americans. Most of us carry our own preconceptions with us, and I think a lot of the American tourists who go to the Soviet Union come away thinking just what they thought when they went. But, of course, others are changed. I don't think very many of these Americans become pro-Soviet. I don't think many of them are infected, so to speak, by any Marxist ideology. I think that a lot of them are, as I was, impressed by the society. And quotation from Ed Murray of the Los Angeles paper, he was evidently deeply impressed, as I said, more impressed, I think, than was quite justified. But in any case, people see the reality and the ongoing nature of this society and the fact that there are not mobs ready to pick up the cobblestones in the streets, and this changes their views.
I mean this question seriously. It may not sound so. Do you think there would be any defections among Americans who visited Moscow this year or Russia this year?
There might be some. There are in any group of human beings as large as this tourist. Well, these tourists. I don't suppose many of the tourists are going to defect. I think there might be some people who would like to stay around and see what happens in the next few years. It's an extremely interesting place, and perhaps the word defection isn't altogether the word. Isn't altogether right. I don't see why it has to be defection to want to watch what is happening in a laboratory of social experiment.
Does this apply to any of the people, the personnel in the fair?
I haven't known of any definite cases. There are quite a number of them, and some of them are young people. I haven't heard of anybody who's going to stay, and if they should stay, And if it's an honest curiosity, of course, there are some American students that are going there on exchange program this year. Why not? We want to find out what these people are like. The absurdest mistake of all is to shut the door and not try to find out anything about them.
You don't think they're being brainwashed or anything of that kind?
No. I saw no such cases, although this can happen.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Canham, when Mr. McCoyan was in this country, you published or maybe wrote an editorial in which you said this. Americans know he is in the United States for one purpose alone, to serve the interests of the Soviet Union. Now, I'm sure you agree that Premier Khrushchev is coming for no other reason. What can we hope to gain by his visit?
Well, as I just said, we can learn a little more about these people. But in specific connection with this visit, we can hope that he will learn a little more about us. He isn't going to be brainwashed either. He's the last person, probably, who will be brainwashed. But he's going to, I think, be impressed a bit. As everybody has said, even tough old Dr. Adenauer in Bonn said that he would be impressed by American strength, and hence it would be a good thing. I think this is an advantage for the American people, that the leader of the second world's greatest power knows us a little better. I'd like to have him know us fairly well.
Well, aren't we being a little bit naive? We hear that he has the best spy system in the world. Do you think there are many things we're going to be able to show him that he doesn't already know something about?
We also hear that he doesn't get told very accurate evaluations of what has been happening in the United States, that after the McCoyan visit, he was very much surprised by some of the things he heard. And so I'm not sure about spy systems, even the best, even our own. I think it all depends on who does the evaluating of the intelligence that the Cloak and Dagger boys bring in.
You think, then, that if he sees our wealth and our freedom, that he's going to give up his threats of world conquest?
No. I think, however, it's going to be one factor, having some bearing.
What do you think is the most we can hope from his visit?
Most that we can hope is that he won't assume that at some point, a few years hence, in the midst of the so-called missile gap, that he could destroy us without any retaliation. If that conclusion can be brought in on him, then this mistake, this awesome, awful moment when they press the button, won't happen. And if this can contribute to preventing that, I think it's certainly worthwhile.
Now, as a trained newspaper man, and as somewhat just said, as the president of the world's largest business organization, what dangers do you see in having him here for 12 days?
The whole situation, the whole thaw, not just his being here for 12 days, but the total situation, certainly contains dangers. One danger may be that perhaps the Soviets are mounting a peace offensive to put us all to sleep. And if this is a cracking first-rate peace offensive to cause us to reduce our armament expenditures and to turn over and relapse into apathy, then it would be a great victory for them, and we must be certain that that doesn't happen. And secondly, it may be that this is a trade offensive, which as a trade offensive would be intended to further communism's strength and purposes. Maybe they want to buy whole plants and valuable inventions, the petrochemical industry, things like that, which will carry them a big jump forward in their economy. These are grave dangers. We have to be very careful every step of the way.
You're not prepared, then, to tell the members of the Chamber of Commerce to start trading with them on a large scale yet?
I should only say, buyer and seller beware.
Mr. Schwartz.
Mr. Canham, I've been reading this pamphlet that the Chamber of Commerce got out recently on the communist offensive in American business. And I'm going to hold you responsible for it for a moment, if I may, because there are a couple of statements here which strike me as rather curious. On page 13, for example, there's a sort of deprecatory statement about the search for profits. You talk about it is important to distinguish the narrow interpretation of self-interest, which you then define as the search for immediate profits, from self-interest in the broader sense. And then a little later on page 18, you talk about free world economic growth may well require an international discipline, which can be created only through the concerted action of the business forces of all nations. I'm wondering if that kind of talk, and I may be misinterpreting this, if this doesn't reflect a kind of feeling in the business community itself that if we are to meet the Soviet economic challenge, we have got to change the nature of the American and the free world economic system. After all, weren't we taught originally in Economics 1 that the businessman's job is to make a profit? And secondly, didn't we think the free world was based upon competition rather than some kind of international discipline, quote unquote?
Yes, I think we were, but we were. I don't think we were ever taught to disregard the national interest. And sometimes the national interest will be much higher and much more important than making a profit. And so it ought to, the national interest has to be kept in mind. This is a very tricky business. I saw some of this. I saw instances where rival American companies, I think, were on the verge of selling things to the Russians that shouldn't be sold to the Russians because of a competitive situation.
In other words, you're arguing for greater government intervention in our economy to prevent rival companies from doing things that may hurt the national interest?
I argue for self-discipline. But in the matter of a trade competition with the Soviet Union and with the selling of patents and of articles and of elements of industry, which may have a direct bearing on the war-making power of the Soviet industry, I am certainly saying that government has to say yes.
Are you suggesting that American businessmen would betray the national interest in the return for a certain profit? That's a strange kind of implication from a man in your position.
I wouldn't for a minute condemn American business.
But you indicate some American businessmen might do that or have been thinking of doing that, and the government's got to do something about
precisely. It. Precisely. The American business is no better and no more holy than American newspapermen or American anything else. And in this drive and thrust for business, which is a very healthy thing, there come times when somebody has to step in and say, look, brother, we happen to know some facts that you may want to hear. And these are the facts. This is what the effect will be if you sell this element in the petrochemical industry of the Soviet Union. Somebody has got to tell them that. They ought to know it for themselves.
Mr. Maisel.
Mr. Canham, some of us who were in Russia recently got the impression that they were talking about peace and using the word so freely and so grandiosely that they might wake up and find themselves a bunch of pacifists for sure. Did you get that impression at all?
No, I saw quite a lot of uniforms, and I'm sure that the general public feeling is that of peace, but I think at the same time that the government, as we all know, is maintaining one of the greatest, if not perhaps the greatest, war-making machines in the world.
I don't think they can lull themselves.
I think the pacifist movement has not yet taken over.
Well, the fair, our fair over there, you saw it, and I guess you saw quite a bit of it. Do you think it had been a better idea for the government to have handled that thing entirely from start to finish instead of having private industries come into it? I understand some of them may be in trouble now.
By no means. I think it was much better the way it is. You might have had a more neatly symmetrical operation. Conceivably, it might not have been. Might have been much worse. No, I think that it shows all of the disorder of our way of life, and I'm very proud of that.
The criticisms of the Russian, some of the Russian press, that we didn't show any of our heavy industry, just our pretty pictures and things like that.
That's right, and the fact that they criticize it is the best proof that we did the right thing.
Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Canham, I want to take a little different approach to Mr. Swartz's question. I wonder if the Chamber of Commerce is not suffering a little bit from split personality on this subject.
Most of us do.
They point out that the Soviet economic offensive does not operate in isolation, but is strategically and tactically coordinated with political, diplomatic, psychological, and military operational techniques for conducting foreign relations. Having pointed that out, I wonder, and in other sections in the pamphlet, I wonder if you do not really recognize that in order to take part in this economic competition, it is going to be necessary to have greater government direction in the field of foreign trade.
I would say contact with the government, and I don't say think the direction. Yeah, I wouldn't go that to. I wouldn't take that word. In this same pamphlet, which you quote, the Chamber of Commerce proposes itself setting up a channel of liaison between the various places in the government where they know things that a lot of the businessmen haven't learned, don't know, and have no way of learning. And we propose to become an intermediary between government and business so that business won't fall into any booby traps.
Well, is that really enough, actually, when you're competing with a country which uses foreign trade as a political weapon?
I want as little government control as possible.
Well, it isn't what you want, actually, Mr. Canham, but what the circumstances require,
yes.
Is it not?
And American business has always done what, when it got right up against it, what the circumstances require. I think this can be carried out without turning our export business into a regimented state of affairs. And I would say what we need, the amount of coordination with government that is needed, with at the same time the greatest possible values which competition and drive and incentive will bring.
Well, how would this coordination be carried out? Would you form a government agency, a private agency, what?
I would hope that if you have to have an agency, and I hope we don't have to have any more agencies, but if you have to have an agency, I would like to, as I say, the Chamber hopes very much to provide the information. American businessmen, if they know the implications of some action, will think it over and may well discipline themselves, just as American newspapers sometimes. We talk about self-discipline. This is very important, not always carried out. But I think that the self-discipline will carry you quite a long way.
Yeah, but you're talking about a negative matter, not doing things. There are many places where positive action is
I'm talking
required.
About both.
I'm talking about both.
I really mean to talk about both, not just telling people what would be a booby trap and what's an opportunity.
Mr. Spivak.
Well, Mr. Canham, on that, when you were inaugurated as president of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, you warned the delegates that the free world must be stirred to greater action to meet the challenge of communism. Well, evidently, the free enterprise system, in your own judgment, hasn't been properly stirred to meet this challenge. How are you going to do it voluntarily, then? Or do you think we are doing it?
It's the only way it ever will be done, that is to say, voluntarily, unless we are going to change our form of economy, which we are not going to do. I think everybody that takes these things seriously has got to keep on reminding us Americans of our unfinished business and of our responsibilities. We must be worthy of the interest which the ordinary Russian has in us these days. We must clean our own house. And these are things that have to be done, and I think that the American enterprise system has a great contribution to make.
Well, along those lines, you also said when you were inaugurated that you were determined to speak frankly about the shortcomings of American business.
Right.
Now, what do you consider some of the important shortcomings that are hindering us in this fight for survival?
I think one of them is perhaps, well, we put an awful lot of emphasis on consumers' goods and on piling up a kind of materialistic mound of luxury and all the rest of it. This is perhaps heretical, but I think we need to reassess our values and give ourselves a list of the most important things to do. And the most important thing in our economy, of course, is to meet the basic needs of the people and to make it a...
Isn't this economic planning a la Moscow?
Oh, no. This is the response of patriotic individual Americans to a world situation which is very grave.
Mr. Canham, one other question. The AFL-CIO is refusing to have any official contact with Mr. Khrushchev when he comes here. What about the chamber, U.S. Chamber of Commerce? Are you going to advise them to have official contact or not?
Question hasn't come up. Nobody has done asked.
Well, it's up now.
it all depends on whether we're asked. I wouldn't decide such a thing. I doubt very much if the occasion arises.
Well, the AFL-CIO decided by themselves. Nobody asked them.
I was going to say it's a little premature to decide you won't go to a party until you've been asked, but I say that with all respect for the eminent leaders of American labor. We're asked, we'll decide.
No, but this isn't a question of his asking you. What about your asking him? After all, you're the world's largest business organization. And certainly the largest American business organization.
I can't commit them, but if Mr. Khrushchev was to see the headquarters building of the United States Chamber of Commerce in Lafayette Square, I suspect he would be invited in.
And that's all you'd show him?
What do you mean, all
just the building?
No, heavens no. My own personal view, I'm in favor of contact. I'm not in favor of silly, absurd, adulatory enthusiasm. We won't throw any flowers in the street, and we won't bow down before Mr. Khrushchev. And frankly, I think it's a very hypothetical situation, because I doubt very much if he wants to come to our shop.
Mr. Mazel.
Mr. Canham, as a political reporter fascinated by elections, I'd like to know, how were you as a newspaper man elected president of the Chamber of Commerce?
I haven't the faintest idea, and I'm the worst possible person to answer that. It was done by a nominating committee who came around and said, would I do it? And I had to think very hard before I was able to answer, and it took some time to make up my mind.
Mr. Canham, I'm sure our viewers must be interested in that. They're curious about the badge you're wearing. Does that have anything to do with
your
country?
Well, this is one of the badges which the guides and the other officials at the fair in Moscow wear. And when you cannot walk 10 paces without some Russian saying coming up to you and asking you some questions, they're so eager to know what it's all about. Unfortunately, since I don't speak Russian, I wasn't much good to them. But I had an interpreter, and I thought
maybe the political conventions had arrived a year early.
Well, if they could see it closely, they would think that we'd change our language.
Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Canham, along with the rest of us, some of us here, you've had a short view of Russia. Do you feel any safer now that you've come back for having seen it?
No.
You do not feel safer?
No, I don't think they... I think the public opinion is there. Or people, ordinary people, are wonderfully nice, interesting people, dedicated to peace and improving their own lives. But this is not necessarily the position and the attitude of the men in the Kremlin.
I'm speaking of what you really see as the strength, the basic strength of the country. From what you... I know you can only have a superficial impression.
Yes.
But,
okay, on that point, obviously they're strong because they put up the first satellite, and they have done things like that, and their tanks and their jet aircraft and probably many other things are very good. But on the other hand, many things are very bad. And I don't think their technology, it seems to me, must be pretty spotty. And where they've put in effort and money and attention and got the trained foreman, they've done a job. But where they haven't, the buildings are falling down.
Gentlemen, I think that our time has just about run out, and I'm sure that the panel has many more questions that could be asked, but I'm sorry that I must interrupt.
Monitor's thanks to Erwin D. Canham, President of the United States Chamber of Commerce, and editor of the Christian Science Monitor, and to the members of the Meet the Press panel for an enlightening half hour. Meet the Press, produced by Lawrence E. Spivak. Now, this